Basically, our sign ordinance was, if you're doing a sign that's not, what do we call them?
Preferred signage.
Preferred signage, you could go up to 200 square foot. Regular signage was 100 square foot.
But I think with this type of thing, we're
it's going to be different.
Absolutely. I think that we, preferred signage basically means a landscaped type of sign, more of a ground sign, and that's why we give the benefit of a more area. It can be lower ground sign and then have multiple uses on that. One thing that the township does not want to see, and I think that you represented the township when we went through so much of this sign stuff, Tony, is we don't want to see these high pole signs. We don't want to see the typical 20 foot in the air logo sign. I think with this type of a development, unless the fellows have a different idea, we would lean only to preferred signage and everybody using the same signage. Everybody using the same, not big signs on each building, I'm not sure.
We like to call them monument signs. We hate pole signs. But signage on a highway is important, but they're attractive. They're definitely not pole signs. They're generally made of brick, okay, with a lot of character associated with them.
But I think for the sake of this, we need to come to some sort of standard about the size of that sign, what that's going to include. And not a lot of separate monument signs. Yeah. One monument sign.
I don't know. There's a lot of frontage for one monument sign. I would say that would not be practical. I'm not suggesting that there's, four, okay, but you have quite a bit of frontage here. And what I think one of the worst things you can have is a sign with a lot of names on it, okay, that people can hardly see, which is not safe.
There is allowance for a marquee sign, which is usually the kind where you have to say, okay, here's the entrance, and there's three businesses in here or four. But, of course, the malls have really big ones. Isn't a mall. This isn't like, King of Prussia Mall.
I think our height limitation on that is 10 foot.
Well, I don't think the height's really going to be an issue.
I think the number of signs is going to wind up being an issue.
So you're not envisioning having what's referred to in here as a marquee sign, where you would list the three or four businesses that might be on there. You wouldn't do that, or would you?
If you know our plan, there are different buildings there, and if we need to propose something, we will. One sign is not practical. Generally, we follow an ordinance. It sounds like your ordinance is not goes into much detail on this. So
I think our ordinance is pretty detailed about signage. It's
very detailed.
When it comes to signage.
I'm looking at it now, and it's detailed. Yeah.
But what does it say about number of signs on a property that has as much frontage as we have here?
Doesn't even go by the property. It goes by each business.
It goes by the business. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that makes. We asked Mr. Waldron, since he's quite familiar with it, to propose something, circulate that to us, and we take a look because he'll get the input from his client, and then we can weigh it against what exists in the ordinance and knowing that this is.
This is our plan in Smithfield. I hear Smithfield mentioned a lot. And, Wawa has a sign, okay, which actually has a smaller sign dealing with this pad. St. Luke's has a pad, beautiful monument sign. This will be a Dunkin' Donuts and a few stores. Now, these are not big, big signs, okay, but they're very attractive, okay, and they serve the purpose. They're not pole signs. Please take a look at it.
I can certainly put something together that would First of all, I'll finish reading these because I haven't read these in years.
Okay.
But, and I see they're broken out by the development district anyway, so that makes it easier. It does make it clear what's prohibited, and I don't think any of those would be something Jim would want anyway, so that's good. but there's a fair amount of detail there, so.
Right, and we'd... if there's some creative thinking or whatever that you can come up with, we certainly want to discuss that. I don't think we take it into account.
No.
A Wawa does not need a sign. Its own colors, its own stuff, its own stuff, the way they're laid out, people know what they are. So there's a way in this kind of a development to limit the amount of signage that you're using.
Yeah. Just so by depending.
You don't need a real big sign with that. No. You might need something.
By the way, the sign is not real big, and it's not a pole sign. Yeah. We hate pole signs. It's made of brick. It's expensive.
Directional signs within, maybe, or something.
Well, once you get in there, yeah.
Well, there's also canopy signs. There's use of all different types of things, especially with those type of commercial things. So
in the sign ordinance, you'll see there's acceptance.
So we need to...
Perhaps one of the things that maybe the commission needs to look at and supervisors is whether there's a requirement for a single standing marquee sign with the businesses on there. And the next step would be whether or not you allow each sign to have a sign on the business itself.
Right.
I don't think it's very clear in our ordinance now whether the marquee sign is the only sign you can have, or whether you're still allowed a building sign. That would be the issue in my mind.
No, I believe the ordinance did have marquee sign and then a sign on each building, but the sign on each building was less square footage with the marquee sign.
And you got an aggregate a total with your square footage. So I think we need to be careful.
Well, I don't want to rewrite the whole sign ordinance.
No, we don't.
Sign section, but if we put it into this curative amendment, then it can work for that.
And if you need
to tweak the rest, you could do that sometime.
Right. We're back to the specific use of more on less property.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we want to get carried away with writing a sign, but I think we need to have specific foot requirements or some sort of threshold. That's only my opinion.
And if you would, next time, if you could bring in a picture or design of the monument signs, I'd like to see that.
The ones down there would be good. Yeah.
Okay. The next item I have is fire protection requirements. And there may be some ignorance on my end as to the extent to which your existing ordinance covers fire protection requirements. But in the Ben Salem ordinance, about four pages in, there's just one small paragraph about adequate means of fire protection, such as fire lanes, acceptable surface and width, hydrants, fire department connections, et cetera, that are approved by the fire marshal. Does it make sense to include something like that, or does the overall ordinance have that requirement in there already?
We have in there that it has to be reviewed by the Milford Fire Department.
Fire Department, yeah.
Yeah.
And the only different issue here might be that you're going to have buildings fairly close together.
Right, I think it's fair to put some sort of statement in here that's clear. Welfare and safety is our primary function, is it not?
Well, with many commercial uses, it makes good sense to have the fire department, look at it and see if it's an issue. We're not going to have a height issue, so that's not going to be a problem. But
it's going to be mostly access.
A fire lane would probably be the most obvious thing.
And turning radiuses gets to be the boogeyman in these, right? From an engineering perspective, bringing the trucks in and having turning radiuses while they're operating, while businesses are functioning. That's really a difficult task for you guys. So.
Obviously, PennDOT deals with it when you come in off the highway, but then once you get
they don't care once you're off the road. All they want to do is get you in the turn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But have those, especially if you're dealing with a ladder truck or something, then that's so I think it only makes sense.
Okay. I even believe that's in our ordinance about the fire lane.
Yeah.
I'm sure that it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Or county planning. Section. Yeah, it's
the parking sections may even have some reference to that.
We do have loading zones. In conditional use, we do have a provision in the application for it's on D8. It's adequacy of fire lanes and other emergency zones and the provision of fire hydrants.
Yeah, it is.
Well, if that's adequate, then clearly it's just a reference to that.
That has to be addressed as part of the criteria, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right, good. Then the next item I have is, do you want specific requirements for a convenience store with fuel dispensing, a Wawa? And I looked to the Ben Salem ordinance subsection 493B2, and it has, for a convenience store with fuel dispensing facility, following standards apply, and they have five different items there. Obviously, if your ordinance already covers this, no need, but you may want to review that and let me know what you want to fold into this conditional use requirement.
Do we have copies of that? I haven't found it yet.
Yes, I think they were circulated. I know I sent it off to Mr. Waldron, but I can get that to you, and I'll direct you to that specific section.
You sent me the letter. You didn't send me the sections from Ben Salem, though, right?
Right.
No.
That was a separate email, I believe, coming from the township.
Yeah.
Did you look at the Smithfield ordinance on
that
convenience?
Of course. Did they have anything on it?
Looking for that now. Do you know what section?
Yeah. He was just wondering, since you looked at the Smithfield ordinance on a number of items here, whether they actually address that as well. Because the reference is from the Ben Salem.
It's from Rachel.
Huh?
Rachel sent those ordinances.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't see it with a quick look. I don't think there's anything onerous.
No, but I think you need to be.
There's usually some insurance requirements that are going to make it difficult for them to operate without meeting it, and some state regs, although I don't know that they cover everything that's in the Ben Salem one, because I didn't get to see the Ben Salem.
Well, then, then we definitely need to speak about the fuel dispensing then, right? Then you guys can work on that. Is that something that you can do together? Okay.
So, all right. Tony, Waldron, we'll talk offline about that.
Okay,
good. All right. Those are the sections from the various ordinances I wanted to address. I have four items that I want to come back to as regards to the prior discussions that we had. First is the density.
Mm-hmm.
EPG proposed a minimum of a lot area of 7 acres, and we have it as 10 acres. Looking, Ben Salem looks like they're 20 acres, and I think Smithfield has 25 acres, just by way of reference. I think we're staying with 10 acres, unless somebody on the Planning Commission tells me different.
Well, I might throw in, before you weigh in on that, I think we even indicated this at either the June meeting, I believe it was the first July meeting, I wasn't at the second one. The 7 acres did pertain to the land across the street. And one of the points that I was making was that, and I've said this too, with adequate area for sewage, I believe that I could get Patrick or someone to lay out three separate lots, sell them to three separate owners, have one common and shared entrance in, and not have to meet the requirements that are in this ordinance. I think one of the benefits of doing this amendment is that impose a lot more regulations on a group of businesses together than you could do individually. And I don't know that there's, I mean, yes, there are some of the provisions we're talking about are for industrial parks where there are 100 acres or more, you know, and we're talking altogether 27 acres and not all of it usable at the back end of things. But I don't know that there's any real harm in creating the 7 acres, because even if you did allow for it, you still have to meet all these criteria. If it doesn't happen, I'm going to tell either, whether it's Jim or whether it's the Santos, you know, you should just try and do a regular subdivision, a commercial subdivision, because I believe that you could do that. Now, certainly PennDOT would not want three entrances onto the highway.
No.
But so that's how you sell the lots. But if you do that, you're not going to have nearly the controls that you
that's
have
right.
in this ordinance if you don't do it. And I don't know that there's that many properties available, since you only allow this in the DDZ district, that could be developed in the future. I mean, I don't think there's that many, especially, you know, seven or more. I mean, there could be a couple, but maybe that's not the worst thing in the world, because, you know, the township got the benefit of the fact that the Santos treated this as a farm for decades and decades. But this isn't farmland anymore. You know, it just isn't, other than down over the hill there, which is nice, and that's still being preserved by the county. I don't really think that it's that terrible that this area here is going to be developed. I know some people wanted to save it, but there's lots of other places in Pike County that you could save that are really pristine and don't have a somewhat major highway going through the middle of it, you know. So that's my point for why.
It's just not good planning to have three buildings there versus a building that the landlord can control by making it a 7-acre development versus splitting it up into, you know, three or four different lots.
So what would you do? What would you do with the 7 acres?
Mm-hmm. If you end up, because there's an option there, okay? If you were to exercise that option, what would you propose to do there? Something similar to this, but with fewer uses?
Could be a larger user.
Okay.
Yeah, not huge, because it's only 7 acres, but certainly not, could be a building that could have several tenants to it.
Oh, that's true. But then you wouldn't need this.
Yeah. But the alternative of doing three separate buildings, to me, that makes no sense.
But you're not answering the question, I'm sorry.
One larger building that would have several tenants, or maybe two buildings, okay? But it would all be under a landlord control versus trying to do something where, you know, you're going to get three separate lots and market them. You know, it's just not good planning.
It's our way we operate now, currently. If you look at Wheatfield Village, there's separate buildings there.
What's wrong with separate lots? Why is that not good planning?
There's nothing wrong with separate lots.
No, but I'm asking.
Some of these rules that we're agreeing to that could be part of this amendment would not apply to those.
No, I understand. I got you, Tony. Yeah. I understand what you said.
That's what I'm talking about.
But if we're having separate lots, and that's already in the ordinance, what makes that poor planning?
I don't think it is poor planning. I think that the reality is, you know, because I didn't know Jim was necessarily going to say that. If you're going to have one building, then this doesn't apply anyway.
Anyway.
So we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that might be one of the visions. I was thinking 2 to 3 buildings. And if there's going to be one, then we don't have to worry about it. With two, you know, you break it into two lots, that's not the end of the world. If you were going to put three uses in there, and I think you could make that happen.
Absolutely.
The sewer could work.
Absolutely. You may get four.
Yeah, conceivably.
You may get four.
Yeah, with 20,000 square foot per space, you conceivably could do that. Yeah.
Right. No, I'm just... I'm just asking. I'm not saying one way.
That's the argument for why 7. I mean, the world won't end if it's not, but yeah. I didn't think it was doing any real harm there. I understand where Andrew's coming from. When he mentioned, like, oh, what, 25 or even more. But they're also envisioning, I think, a lot more uses going on to those types of arrangements, not just 2 or 3. After all, if I have 50 acres, I'm not just going to settle for 3 businesses on there, you know.
No, and I understand that, and that's why I believe that there needs to be constraint or a formula for the number of businesses according to the amount of acreage. Mm-hmm. So
the other thing that I guess I will question is that the minimum setbacks in number 4, the front yard setback was back and forth, and it's now 50 feet again. We had proposed 35. Partly we proposed 35 because that's what all the other properties in the development district have to comply with. It's a 35-foot setback. It's conceivable that you would have a greater, if there was going to be a use that you didn't want people to see, that you would have a greater setback for sure. But the purpose of this is to attract people into businesses. Presumably some of them will be repeat customers, but some of them are going to be first timers. So I just wasn't sure why that went back to 50.
Because we're trying to squeeze everything to the center of the property.
Okay.
That was to, you know, to give that green space.
To have it up front.
It all the way around. We had increased all the setbacks.
No, they didn't change in what I was sent. They're the same as what they were before.
I thought they were all increased.
But there's a provision that says that they could be increased to 50 if the sightline and topography warrant it for the side and rear yards. But otherwise, they're...
Well, and if there's residential use, it's on either side.
No driveways are included in the side yards or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Then there's language about buffer, but that's if it's coincident with a residential zone or residentially developed properties adjacent.
So then, well, the setbacks, I don't know as if we have a huge issue with that.
I don't think so.
But I want to go back to the... Go ahead.
The key is going to be having buffering for any yard that adjoins residential or residential zone.
Right. That's what I read.
And that's always been in the ordinance, but that'd be on the side, not the front.
But that's what I...
The front's the one I was questioning, not the side ones. Mm. Kevin, you said something about going back to...
Well, if we keep talking about Smithfield and how important that was and how good an ordinance that is, and we go to the other ones, mm-hmm. and they're requiring... 20 and 25 acres for this, so for this type of an ordinance. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't apply in this circumstance because we're asking for 7.
Well, I'm saying that this is a different thing. The commercial area that the municipality allows here is much less than what you have in some other places, and that's fine. That's the way Milford's laid out, and it's largely residential and rural. There is a concentrated commercial area, and it's along this highway here. The idea that there would, if you really wanted to zone it out entirely, then you'd say it should be 25 or 50 acres because there probably isn't any properties. So I think you have to take into account the properties that do exist. It's sort of like when somebody says, okay, we're only going to allow cell towers in the valley, not up on the mountain. That's kind of effectively creating an inability to do the proposed use.
Okay.
Which I'll tail into the one other thing because it kind of ties in with the lot size was the thing about the maximum lot coverage being 25%. And I understand and I appreciate that there's a fairly complicated procedure there in Section 414 for being able to increase that. And I think that's appropriate in some places. But there's no other township in Pike County that has a lot coverage of 25% for commercial development. It is by far the lowest, actually. Westville starts at 70% and says you could possibly even go higher. That's a bit high. Dingman is 50%, and you can go higher depending on the circumstances. The reason why we were asking for the 65%, not 75%, which is in that section it says it could even go that high, is that if you're going to plan a development like this and kind of plan how it's going to, the entire thing's going to be laid out as opposed to separate businesses, you should be able to figure that, okay, I can get that 65%. Right now, the way the ordinance reads, if the township wants to say no, I'm not sure how I can challenge that, other than to say that the ordinance is improper. And that's not what we want to say. I have no problem with you leaving it that way. I just think that in return for these things that are going to be regulated more than other individual businesses would be, there should be some trade-off. And the only way you can get the 65%, even if it's written into the ordinance, is to prove that your stormwater plan works. It's not like we're saying, oh, give us 65% and don't worry about stormwater, or don't worry about the parking layout and things like that. So I think that, and quite honestly, that's an important thing, because if somebody says to me, it looks like I might only be able to develop 25% of a property I buy, that's hard to make plans on.
But to follow that reasoning, if 414 allows for the greater maximum impervious, mm-hmm. because you've shown you can meet stormwater management requirements, isn't that a good thing from all perspectives? It allows you to build more so long as you control the stormwater. And from the township perspective, it's making sure that you're able to actually build out what you're proposing while protecting the neighbors.
Well, I think just so we're not on the same page, 414 allows you to increase, but it also increases the minimum yard setback.
Yes.
By an appropriate amount. So if you have 20 acres, which I believe is what you're talking about.
Right. This side is, yes.
The minimum yard setback would be 75 feet at 65%. So is that the concern from this developer's standpoint, Tony? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, it really is that if you can meet these requirements that also go with this planned unit development, that you should be able to say, okay, the 65 is a given, as long as we show that the stormwater is properly managed and approved, obviously not just by the township, but by DEP through Pike County.
Would it also, Tony, be that the traffic has to work as well? In terms of safety and traffic studies?
Yeah.
That's also included.
Yeah,
I think our issue is with 414, the way it's written.
Yeah, it sounds like the developer, the guarantee of 65%, and then I'll show you stormwater management works, whereas the township, the way it's written, is show us the stormwater management works, and then you'll get the 65%.
Right.
I kind of like the way the township has written it.
25 is the minimum.
I've never seen it. Provided you have 75-foot setbacks.
Yeah.
But in all the other municipalities that I deal with, where it's 50% or greater, they still start with the idea that you have to have the proper stormwater planning.
Correct.
And it says it can go up to 65%. What if I come in with a plan that really, we believe, works really good, and I get the answer that it can only be 40%? And that eliminates one or more of the businesses I'm planning. Does that mean I got to go challenge the ordinance in order to be able to possibly put in what I had hoped to do? It just seems a bit, it's too restrictive, I'll be honest with you. It just is, in my opinion. Now, you're entitled to your opinions too, I get it.
You know? As I said, Tony, the infrastructure improvements between the traffic and sewer, it's going to be very high here. And 65%
is set the percentage?
Hmm?
Does it say we set the percentage?
No.
No, I believe it was between 25 and 65.
Yes, it's
depending on what the plan shows.
It's between 25 and 65% depending on what, if the stormwater management works and all that stuff. I don't think it is up to the board to set the percentage on our perception. It doesn't read that way.
It was supposed to read so that when you bring us a design, everything has to work, and that's if you can only get 55% coverage.
Mike, good for